here we go. Hi, Helen Hong.
Hi, Jake Heath. How are you?
I'm very well, and I'm very excited for this next episode of Go Fact Yourself. We've got two of the stars of Superstore, Ben Feldman and Lauren Ash. And boy, this was a fun episode, wasn't it?
Super fun. And I really, I'm a fan of the show. I'm a fan of both of these people. I've worked with Ben Feldman on Silicon Valley. So yeah, it was a treat.
Well, as fans of that show will know, it was recently announced that this season of Superstore is going to be its last, which is a bit of a bummer, but they have a bunch of more episodes to be released into the spring at least. But we wanted to acknowledge that that news came out after we recorded this episode, which is why we don't bring it up, because, of course, we would have loved to have brought it up and bummed everyone out even more. So please enjoy this episode of Go Fact Yourself with Ben Feldman and Lauren Ash from Superstore, and we'll see you next time on Go Fact Yourself.
Are you a real know-it-all? Do you annoy your family by shouting the answers while watching Jeopardy? Do you drive people crazy when you start a sentence with, well, actually? Well, guess what? You can go fact yourself. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Go Fact Yourself, the show where we take the smartest people we know and make them look dumb. And then smart again. I'm Helen Hong. And now, socially distancing from our homes in Los Angeles, here's our moderator, Jake Heath Van Stratton.
Thank you, Helen. Great to see you. How are you doing?
I am doing very well. I'm in the middle of trying to find my dog, Dodger, a sibling.
Oh, adorable.
Yeah.
Now, I assume this is not a birth sibling from the same litter that is long lost.
Long lost.
No. This will be a love sibling.
Yeah, my dog is 9 years old, and he's a shelter stray pickup.
Yeah.
So, like, who knows what his, who knows what his...
And how are you going about this journey,
who
this
knows?
Search?
It's really hard. Yeah.
You just have to go around and pet dogs and find one that you like.
Yeah, like, it's really hard to find a dog, like, especially because I'm trying to rescue a dog, obviously. Like,
right.
And I would love to rescue a dog through the shelter system that Dodger came from, which is the L.A. City shelter system, mm-hmm. which is massive and horrible. And, a lot of dogs in the shelters have, they have, like, psychological issues.
Right. So do you think you just got lucky with Dodger? Or do you think
yeah.
So you gotta get you're willing to roll the dice again and see if you can get.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would be willing to put up with a little pee in the mm-hmm. house.
Interesting. It's sort of like dating. Like, you start off with these high standards, and then eventually it's like, okay, I can put up with a little pee in my house.
Yeah.
Well, both of my cats, Cookie and Muffin, were rescues, and I had Cookie about maybe 8 years or so before I added Muffin. Mm. And Muffin was part of a litter of three that I was fostering, and I actually was thinking about keeping one of her brothers, Biscuit. And then I just noticed that Muffin and Cookie seemed to get along so well, so I kind of made a last-minute audible decision to change to keep Muffin, and I'm wondering if I should have kept Biscuit. Not because Muffin isn't great, but because Muffin and Cookie kind of live... It's sort of like they're a separated couple who are still sharing the house while they're working out their litigation agreement. So, you know, there's sort of this uneasy peace going on that you just feel could spill over at any moment. But, you know, we still go out to the park and throw the ball around because, you know, it's important to have some me time. Well, good luck on your search.
Thank you.
Today on Go Fact Yourself, two guests will compete to answer questions about facts they know, facts they might not know, and frankly, facts they should know. Plus, we'll meet actual experts on two very different topics. And finally, we'll declare one of our guests the winner of today's show. Let's get started and meet today's guest. Helen, who are they?
They are the stars of the hit NBC sitcom Superstore. It's Lauren Ash and Ben Feldman.
Hello, Lauren and Ben.
Hi.
Hello.
Ben is waving to everyone around him.
Alone in the room. Alone in a room.
Yes.
Good to be here. Sit. Everybody
sit.
Oh,
Ben, you're so gracious. He's so humble. Right. He's like one of us.
He's a born theater performer. Let's just
My God, like no kidding. Is. I like the pageant
Great to
wave
be here
you were doing
treading
as well.
The boards.
Yes, to trod the boards again on the podcast waves. Boy, there's so much I want to ask you about. But first, Ben, I have to start with this. You and Helen have actually worked together.
We have.
Yes, we have.
We have.
What's she like?
Was that that was a true or false?
No. I'm sorry. We've not gotten to that part of the show
true.
Yet.
True.
No.
Yeah.
We did the show Silicon Valley together. Yeah. I don't know. We spent a day together. In a tiny office.
I want to say the funniest thing that you did is there were like prop Sour Patch Kids. I don't know if you remember this.
Oh, yeah,
but props had put a half open bag of Sour Patch Kids on my desk. And
Ben just picks it up and just starts eating it halfway through the scene, like, inexplicably. And I just thought it was the funniest character choice. Like, oh, no, go ahead. Have my Sour Patch Kid. No, go ahead. That's fine. Just
I don't ever get to play a douchebag. Or I do, but only on that show. And so I like to lean into it, because otherwise I'm just like... the quirky, like, lovable guy who, like, would never eat your Sour Patch Kids.
It was a very D-bag move. If I was the head of HR and I had a half-open bag of Sour Patch Kids and someone started eating my Sour Patch Kids, I'd be like, excuse you.
No, it's one of my favorite candies, too, so I'm happy to match in future takes if I need to keep eating.
And Ben, really, what a curse you have to bear to be the quirky, lovable character in so many things.
We all have our crosses to bear.
Indeed. You know? Now, Lauren, we booked you on the show first, and we actually asked you if there's someone you would like to play against, and you recommended and actually got Ben for us. What was it about Ben that made you think, I would like to beat him in a quiz show?
She'll win.
You know, no, it's not. And I know that's what you're thinking, buddy, but that's not the truth. You know what it is that I think, and here you go, I'm going to get earnest right away. How about this?
No,
I think Ben is one of the funniest people I know. And I think he's great at things that he doesn't think he is. And so I think it's good to push yourself to go out of your comfort zone. And so I thought, you know what, this will be fun. And he's one of my best buddies. So, you know, the chemistry will be great. Now,
here's
back
the best
to the
way. Can I just cut in? Here's the best part about all of that is that my computer froze just a little bit into your speech.
So I gave this very kind statement and you didn't hear any of it. That is right. That feels
right. I kind of got the gist. Like the way my wife watches TV. She's like, she's pregnant and he's mad, blah, blah, blah. Okay, I get it.
Well, Lauren and Ben, you've actually competed against each other before. I saw that you guys were both on Lip Sync Battle. Tell us about what that was like.
Well, that was another thing that I feel like I basically roped Ben into doing. He was not fully interested. And I was like, Ben, it's my dream to go on this show. Please come on this show with me. And he was like, all right, fine, I'll do it. And then he had the audacity to win. And really was the burn, you know?
I had the audacity to make myself look like a complete idiot, which is the only way to win that show.
What was the song that you won on?
It had to be, it was all coming back to me, Celine Dion. If I touch you like this. There was a big dance number, here's the funny part. You can't do her music. She's got powerful lawyers. You can't like dress up like her or look like you're making fun of her. So you can't do it in drag or anything like that. So the show was like, what if we do like Liberace? And I was like, what is your demographic? Like, I know who that is, but I'm an old nerd. To Lauren's point, I don't like doing any of these shows because I hate game shows and I hate quizzes and they stress me out and I hate that kind of competition. And Lauren excels in them and is incredible at them. So this is always a panic attack for me and I'm already sweating.
Lauren, basically you like to rope him in so you can just smash him, just walk all over him.
Listen, I mean, I know that that's how it would seem, but I think it's more that it's because I like it so much that I want him to like it as much as I do, if that makes sense.
It.
And I'm like, no, just keep doing these things with me and eventually you'll like them more, which I recognize is my own personality disorder.
I think that sounds like, isn't that what love is? Let's talk about Superstore. You guys have been through a lot in the last year. You had your 100th episode. You had a Farewell to America, Ferreira, and you went back to work during a pandemic. What's that all been like, if you can even put it into words?
You know, it's a wild ride, I'll tell you that. I think, you know, being a show that's going into its sixth season, we were kind of in a very unique and gift of a position, actually, to be coming back during a pandemic. I think that launching a new show with all that is happening, the protocols both off and on screen, I think would be a huge feat. But for us, I think it was a really cool opportunity. And because we play people who work in stores and obviously the frontline workers, the essential workers that have kept us alive and fed and shopping this entire time so that we can take care of ourselves, literally risking their own health and lives, I think it's a really cool opportunity for us to get to portray them on our show, on a show that, you know, we've already established for, you know, 5 years. Mm-hmm. It's great. It's kind of like a cool opportunity, but it's very surreal, I'll say that.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I really appreciate that the pandemic has been written into the storylines for this season. I really appreciate the weaving in of reality in that, and how you know, this funny comedy show deals with life in the pandemic.
Thank you. Yeah, we you know, some shows don't need to do that, and plenty of people don't want to see it, and they definitely show up in our Twitter mentions if they don't want to see it on our show. But we owed it to that group of people, to the people we've been playing. I mean, we were on this show back in March, and we were playing these goofy grocery store workers. And then we all ran home and hid in our kitchens and ate takeout for now almost a year, while those people that we played ended up becoming life-risking heroes. And it would just be irresponsible of us not to be telling that story and to just be like, here we are in our fun little sitcom world where this disaster didn't happen, even though we did... you know, ICE in another season.
Yeah, you guys take on a lot of social
gun
issues.
Gun rights, yeah. We've done all the issues, yeah. So
right.
It would be
insane
if us
not to.
You
kind of can't not do it. Yeah. Well, you kind of referred to people on Twitter. You do have a hardcore fan base of Superstore fans. It seems like most of it's positive. I'm sure there's some negative stuff also. How would you describe sort of what a typical Superstore fan is or what your fan base is like?
Lauren, you'll be nicer about this, I think.
Oh, no.
Listen, the Superstore stans who I've been engaging with on something called Stan Twitter. I'm learning. I'm an old lady, but I'm learning. They are rabid in the best possible way. They are so invested in the show. They love the show so much. They were so invested in the Jonah Amy storyline.
Right.
That there was an implosion that happened after our 100th episode where, of course, Amy and Jonah do break up.
Oh.
There was a lot of teens that were having a hard time. So I, on that night, I jumped over to Instagram, went live, and I gave a group therapy session. And I kept kind of trying to talk them through, like, you know, sometimes in life, these things happen. And
yeah, you better learn now.
Exactly. I'm like, anything other than a hell yes is a no. You know? And they're like, and they were like, you know what, that you're right. And I'm like, I am right. And I've been through enough to know that. So
I've had that conversation with Lauren before in real life about actual relationships.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, that's very helpful then.
Yeah. Lauren, you're like the mom. You're the therapy mom.
Something that you both have in common, as well as this show, is you've also done animation voices. I know, Lauren, you were on the She-Ra show for a while, and Ben, you're on a show in the Monsters, Inc. universe. Tell us about that.
Super cool. Very, very proud of it. We've been working on it for about 3 decades, and it's got, feels like it. But it's cool. It's got all the people that you love from the movie, Billy Crystal, John Goodman, Henry Winkler's in it. Mindy Kaling is like my best friend on it. It's just a really, really great group of people, and they put a lot of work into this thing, and it looks really, really cool. And it's kind of like a workplace sitcom. They watched Superstore, among other things, for inspiration when writing it. So.
Oh, fun. And what's it called, and where can people see it?
Monsters at Work, and it will be out on Disney+.
Very cool. And Lauren, speaking of voice work, you're adding your voice to the podcast universe. Tell us about this project that you have now.
Yes, I have a podcast that's been out for for a very short period of time. It's called True Crime and Cocktails. Season 1 was an Unsolved Mysteries edition, and it is myself and my cousin by blood, sister by life, Christy Oxborough. And basically, we are obsessed with the new Unsolved Mysteries on Netflix. We got talking about it drunk on Zoom one night. I said we should record this and put it into the world. People will love it.
Yes.
And we've been doing it and having an absolute blast of a time. I know that's the nerdiest thing I've ever said, but we are having
great.
A blast. It's just
it's
so
a real
much
hoot.
Fun. It's a hoot. I think I said that at one point. I think I said, we're having a hoot.
Well, that's what happens when you add the cocktails part to it, I guess.
Exactly.
And have you solved any of the unsolved mysteries?
We've not solved any, but she has uncovered, like, amazing things. It's unbelievable to me the things that she has been able to find. She has taught herself how to read forensics reports.
What?
She gets access to police reports, autopsy reports. There's so much that's public, you know, public have access to. If you're looking for it, you can find.
Yeah.
And she finds it. So it's so fun.
Well, it's so wonderful that you both were able to join us tonight. Thank you so much, Lauren Ash and Ben Feldman.
Yay.
All right, Lauren and Ben, we asked each of you to provide us with a few topics outside your field of work in which you feel you have some expertise. Lauren, you said you know a lot about the TV show The X-Files, the TV show 90 Day Fiancé, and the 1992-93 Toronto Blue Jays baseball game. Whereas Ben, you said you know a lot about the play and movie Glengarry Glen Ross, 1990s alt-rock, and Los Angeles sandwiches.
I knew it! I knew sandwiches was going to be on there! I knew sandwiches was going to be on there! I was going to guess sandwiches! Oh.
Well, later on, we will ask you some in-depth trivia questions about one of those topics. But first, we're going to get your thoughts on something you might know nothing about. It's time to split some hairs with our What's the Difference round. We'll have one question for each of you, each worth up to 2 points. If either of you gives an incorrect answer, the other person has a chance to steal. Your topic today, copycat. First up, Lauren. Lauren, your question comes from a listener. Who is it, Helen?
It's from Megan Doyle of Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Listeners, if you'd like to submit a suggestion for our What's the Difference round, go to gofactyourpod.com and click on Get Involved.
Thank you, Helen, and thank you, Megan. All right, Lauren, in the topic of copycat, copy. Lauren, they both are ways of being a copycat, but what is the difference between imitate and emulate? Imitate and emulate.
Imitating is doing an impression. You are trying to be the subject, and emulate is holding that person or thing on a pedestal. So it's the impersonation versus reverence.
Ooh, I think I saw that movie. All right, great. We've got Lauren's answer. We don't know yet if she's entirely correct. Ben, you can steal if you think she's got it at all wrong. What do you think?
I mean, we may be splitting hairs here, but that's what we do. I may be copycatting here. Her answer. But imitate strikes me as something you would be doing, something that has already happened, something that already exists. Whereas emulate is reaching to act like something would hypothetically. I don't know.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
That's a good answer.
You had me until you said, I don't know.
Yeah, okay, good. Just edit out the I don't know part.
Yep.
Okay, I'm sure we will. I'm sure we will. All right, this segment is leaving a bad impression. Let's go to Helen Hong at the judges' table for the facts.
Here are the facts. Imitate simply means to copy someone, and you can do that for a variety of reasons. An impressionist imitates for laughs. A duck hunter imitates duck calls to shoot them. Your big sister imitates you to make you feel bad.
True story. Yeah.
Emulate also means to copy someone, but specifically because you want to achieve or surpass their success. For instance, Franklin Roosevelt admired his older, distant cousin, Teddy Roosevelt. He emulated him so much, in fact, that he became president too.
That's right. Now, sometimes you might imitate and emulate. Like, if you want to be a successful celebrity impressionist, you could emulate Rich Little's imitations. Helen, how did they do?
I think Lauren got both parts of that correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Congratulations. That's 2 points for Lauren Ash.
Thank you very much.
Up next, Ben, in the topic of copycat, cat. While they both can be found on a cat, what is the difference between cat hair and cat fur? Ben, are you a cat guy? Is this speaking to you?
I'm not a cat guy.
Okay.
In fact, I'm whatever the opposite of that would be. You'll find that Lauren is a cat guy.
Ah, okay, so she might be able to get this on the steel.
But I will say that fur sheds and hair does not. Therefore, hair would be a hypoallergenic cat, perhaps. That's pretty much all I know.
Okay, well, we've got Ben's answer. We don't know yet if he is right. Lauren, what do you think?
Okay, cat fur, first of all, it depends on the breed. But cat fur would be, you know, the thick undercoat. Mm-hmm. And the cat hair is the stuff that comes off that they shed. So they shed the hair, but they always have a base level of fur.
Okay, well, this segment is shedding listeners. Let's go to Helen Hong at the judges' table for the facts.
Here are the facts. Scientifically speaking, cat hair and cat fur are the same thing. But when it comes to how we use these words in the English language, the difference is, just like in real estate, location, location, location. We call it fur when it's on your cat's body. We call it hair when it falls off your cat's body and ends up on your furniture, your clothes, floating in your cocktail, so on. Incidentally, cat's whiskers are also made of the same ingredient as fur, keratin, and in science are referred to as hairs.
That's right. The usage is the difference. Like, if your cat swallows too much fur from bathing, she throws up a hairball, but you feel bad for her because she's just a little furball. True story. Helen, how did our guest do?
I think Lauren might have gotten 1 point.
I was definitely not exactly right. Definitely not.
Yeah, because you did say a cat sheds hair.
I did.
And I said it backwards, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you said, Ben said, hair does not shed and fur sheds.
I heard myself on a delay later and I was like, Ben, I threw
up. All right, so that's 1 point for Lauren. Helen, what is her score at the end of this round?
At the end of that round, Lauren Ash has 3 points and Ben Feldman has 0 points.
All right, but those scores are bound to change as we move on to questions about topics our guests have chosen for themselves. That's all up ahead when we come back on Go Fact Yourself.
Helen, guess who is sponsoring today's show?
Is it Fortunato Chocolate?
What an amazing guess. Yes, that's right. Go Fact Yourself is supported in part by Fortunato Chocolate, and that is very Fortunato for you listeners. Thank you so much. I worked on that all night. Because if you're still looking for a great gift for the holidays, what is a better gift for the person in your life than chocolate? And this is amazing chocolate, Fortunato chocolate. Really? Helen, tell us a little bit about the history of Fortunato.
Well, since 2008, Fortunato number 4 chocolate has been prized by top chocolatiers and pastry chefs in Michelin-starred restaurants. So this ain't no Hershey's Kiss. This is
This is a chef's kiss.
Yes.
Yes. It's made from rare, organically grown heirloom cacao from the jungles of northern Peru, and it's never been available to the general public until now.
Yeah. And Fortunato number 4 is made by a family company, we love that, that has direct relationships with over 400 farmers and a socially conscious business model that helps farm families earn more.
So you can feel good while enjoying good, if not great, if not amazing chocolate. Mm. It's available in 36% milk, 47% dark milk, and 68% dark, and it's sold in 1.1-pound bars with minimal packaging to keep it affordable. How affordable? Well, go to their website and find out. It's at podcastchocolate.com/gofact. What is that, Helen?
It's podcastchocolate.com/gofact.
Make sure to go to podcastchocolate.com/gofact so that they know that you came to them from us. Thank you so much for supporting Go Fact Yourself. Have a wonderful holiday season, and please enjoy lots of chocolate.
Thank you, Fortunato Chocolate.
Macho Man to the top rope. The flying elbow. The cover. We've got a new champion.
We're here with Macho Man Randy Savage after his big win to become the new world champion. What are you going to do now, Match?
I'm going to go listen to the newest episode of the Tights and Fights podcast, oh yeah.
Tell us more about this podcast.
It's the podcast of power, too sweet to be sour, funky like a monkey, woke discussions, man, and jokes about wrestlers' fashion choices, myself excluded.
I can't wait to listen.
Neither can I. You can find it Saturdays on Maximum Fun. Oh, yeah. Dig it.
Welcome back to Go Fact Yourself, where our score is Lauren Ash with 3 points and Ben Feldman with 0 points. Once again, here's J. Keith Van Stratton.
Thank you, Helen. All right, Lauren, of your many interests, you told us you know a lot about the TV show The X-Files, the TV show 90 Day Fiancé, and the 1992-1993 Toronto Blue Jays baseball team. Let's find out a little bit more about each of those. First of all, tell us why you chose the topic of the TV show The X-Files.
Well, The X-Files and I have had a deep love affair for decades. I was, loyal, religious viewer all through when it was originally on. And then over the course of years, my mother and I, every time we got together, we would rewatch. So I've rewatched every episode of the show at least twice, a lot of them 3 times.
Wow.
Yeah, I went to a convention when I was a child with my mother, an X-Files convention. The love is very real.
And what do you think it is about X-Files that appeals to you so much?
As a child, a young girl, it was David Duchovny. But as it went on, I think it was really the relationship between Mulder and Scully that I loved. And then I loved the sci-fi element. I loved the government intrigue. I thought it was just a perfect show.
Don't you think the sexual tension between them? Ooh.
You could fry
it
better.
Yeah. Well, speaking of sexual tension, you also said you know a lot about the TV show 90 Day Fiancé.
Absolutely, I do. Now, this is a show, I've come about this honestly. I was in early, before anybody else was watching this
thing.
Absolutely.
You were a hipster 90 Day Fiancé fan.
I'm an OG, okay? And the first season, by the way, is pretty benign. It's pretty boring. It's as they went that the show really started to pop. I guess their casting choices, maybe. They got, more interesting people. I don't know. But I will say that I have gotten so many people to watch this show, specifically before the 90 Days, season one. If anyone comes to me, and a lot of people do, and they say, where do I start, Lauren? There's so much of it. I say, that is the season to start with. And I've converted many, many people, Ben Feldman being one of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's true. This was before I could get my wife into reality, and so I watched it secretly and shamed on my own. It was a great season.
All right, and then finally, Lauren, tell us why you chose the 1992-1993 Toronto Blue Jays.
Listen, I was a very young child at that time. So young. I'm very young. Anyway, yes. don't do the math. But no, I was a child at that time. And I think that obviously them winning the World Series back to back, being a little kid in Canada, like that was the ultimate. And so that's just something that, first of all, is a time in my reminiscent memory that I love. And recently, when speaking about baseball, I started like rattling off stuff about specifically that era of the Blue Jays. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I think I absorbed a lot back then that I didn't even realize. So I threw that in there. Who knows?
Very cool.
Are you from Toronto?
I'm from just outside Toronto. Yeah. Right. And it was a crazy thing to be a part of, because again, it was, you know, I think at the time the Expos maybe still were in Montreal, but we don't have a lot of teams in Canada, so it felt like the whole country was behind them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it was the first time the World Series was actually outside of the USA, which really
That's right.
at least a little bit more of the world.
Yeah.
All right, so to summarize, Lauren, you said you know a lot about the TV show The X-Files, the TV show 90 Day Fiancé, and the 1992-93 Toronto Blue Jays. Today we're going to quiz you about 90 Day Fiancé.
Yes.
You seem very, very excited. Now, for those who don't know the show, can you give us maybe just like a 20-second recap of what the show is?
Of course. It is a show that is on TLC, The Learning Channel, and it follows the lives of people who are in long-distance relationships around the world. There's different variations on the show. It's a huge universe now, but the original version, it was people who were already engaged, and the American was bringing the person from wherever in the world that they were engaged to America on a K-1 visa, which means you have 90 days to get married. The drama flew. It's a great watch.
Great. Now, as you mentioned, it's had a whole universe now. It's got a bunch of spinoffs. Do you watch all of those spinoffs as well?
It's truthfully, it's getting hard to keep up with all the spinoffs. Mm. I watch like the main kind of chunk, but they have a quarantine show. They have a pillow talk show where other cast members just comment on the current episodes of the show. So it's a lot of content. I definitely have not watched all of it, but in terms of the, you know, traditional seasons, I have watched all of them.
And do you have a favorite couple from the run of the show?
It's so hard to choose. Paul and Carini would definitely be up there for me. I think Paul is one of the most interesting television characters. He's a quirky guy, very honest, very earnest, and they started following me on Instagram, both of them.
Oh, what? That's the best.
Sometimes he has been known to send me videos of their baby. I still nerd out. I nerd out.
What?
I nerd out.
Well, people who love the show really love the show, as Lauren, I believe, will prove in our quiz today. Now, just ahead, we're going to enlist the help of a bona fide expert in your topic with our three-part question. But before that, to give you a chance to show off, here are five trivia questions about the topic, each worth 1 point. If you want it, you're allowed a total of 2 hints in these 5 questions. Now, Ben, do listen closely, because you can steal if Lauren gets any wrong. Ben, tell us a little bit more about how much you know about 90 Day Fiancé.
I know a little tiny bit from that one season that I watched.
Only one season. Okay, well, we'll see if that's
trailer.
The one that maybe Lauren slips up on, gives you a chance to answer.
There's no way Lauren is going to miss something that I picked up.
Well, let's find out. Here's question number one, and Lauren, I have a feeling that you're going to know the answer to this. Okay. The 90-day in 90-day fiancé refers to the length of time couples have to get married after they are approved for what type of U.S. visa?
K-1 visa.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. Came up in our conversation, a K-1 or a fiancé visa, as it is known. All right, you're on the board. Here's question number two. The very first couple we meet in the very first episode of the first season of the show is Alan and Curlium.
Yep.
He lives in Los Angeles and she lives in Brazil, but that's not the only cultural difference they have to negotiate, because they met when Alan was on a religious mission to her hometown and he has been disapproving of some of her activities, including modeling, because of his religious beliefs. What religion does Alan practice?
I believe he's a Mormon.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. Mormonism. Very good. You're 2 for 2. Here's question number 3. As we've talked about, 90 Day Fiancé has led to several spinoffs. But which of the following is not the title of a 90 Day Fiancé spinoff? Is it Darcy and Stacy, Elizabeth and Andre, The Other Way, What Now, or Ask Mama Chantel?
Oh, I didn't know Elizabeth and Andre was a show, and I didn't know Ask Mama Chantel was either.
You do have a hint available if you'd like to use your hint.
No, Elizabeth and Andre. Elizabeth and Andre.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. Very nice. Other spinoffs include Happily Ever After? Self-Quarantined, and Before the 90 Days. All right, you're just rolling right through this. You are 3 for 3. Here's question number 4. Some couples on the show meet online and don't get together in person until the cameras are rolling. This can lead to some awkward moments, such as when in season 3, Nikki came to the U.S. from the Philippines to meet Mark. He greeted her at the airport with roses and chocolates, but then reprimanded her in his car when she dared to touch what?
The window.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. It was the window. Yep. Fun fact, at the time of the show, Mark was 58 and Nikki was 19. Ugh. According to In Touch Weekly, Mark also berated her for the way she breathed, and he filed multiple lawsuits against the show, all of which have been thrown out.
Wow.
He also left the pictures of his first wife up around the home, and she said, could we take these down? And he said, no. Anyway. Yeah.
Not one of the fan favorites, Mark and
not
Nikki.
A fan favorite,
are
no.
Are these two still together?
I am not sure if they're still together. I know that there has been a recent internet push to find Nikki because people are like, should we check on her? How's that going? You know?
Yeah.
Wow.
All right, Lauren, you've gotten 4 correct. You have a chance to go 5 for 5 if you can get this answer correct. Though it seems that finding love via a reality show is foolproof. Alas, as of this recording, according to producers, 8 couples in the 90-day universe have married and divorced, as in they have had their divorces finalized. Name 2 of these couples.
Colt and Larissa.
Okay.
Who else divorced? Think, Lauren, think.
You do have a hint available if you'd like to use the hint.
I'm going to take a hint.
All right, Helen, how about that first hint?
One of the people shares a name with a Muslim prophet, another with a brand of firearms.
Of course. Danielle and Muhammad and Larissa and Colt.
Helen?
That is correct.
Lauren Ash is 5 for 5. Wow, that is correct.
Quick fun fact.
Yes.
My stepdad got me a signed 8x10 of Danielle for Christmas a couple years ago.
Wow.
I have it displayed in my home.
It's great. So you're not one of those people who kind of sheepishly watches it. Your whole family knows that you're into this and they celebrate it too.
We're all in. We're
oh,
all
that's
in.
Great. That's yep. great.
This is why I hate being here.
Hey, Ben, at least she didn't give you a chance to get any of them wrong. That's trying to look it on the bright side.
That was actually a thought that did cross my mind.
By the way, the other couples who have been divorced are Jonathan and Fernanda,
yes.
Molly and Luis, Jason and Cassia, Ymir and Chelsea, Laura and Aladdin, and Jorge and Anfisa. And then, of course, as you mentioned, Colton, Larissa, and Danielle and Muhammad. All right, Lauren, you obviously did very well in that round, but now here's your expert-level question that requires multiple answers. It is time for your cluster fact. We'll be bringing on an expert to assess your response. Lauren, couples on 90 Day Fiancé come from all over the world and are known primarily by their first names. But for up to 3 points, name the 2 couples who include a person from Thailand, and of the 4 people in these couples, name any one of their last names.
Thailand. I'm thinking of the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, gosh. What was her name? Man, oh, man. I don't think I'm going to be able to get it. I can picture them. He wrote a song about her. Oh, David and Annie. David and Annie went to Thailand. Annie is from Thailand.
Okay.
Right?
So
David
we'll tell you.
Toborowski?
Okay, so you're going to say David and Annie, and Toborowski is one of the surnames, and then you're not going to be able to guess on the other?
That's correct.
Okay. Well, Helen is taking note of those answers. We have an expert on hand who can tell us for sure. Helen, who do we have tonight?
Joining us tonight is a couple who was featured on 90 Day Fiancé, 90 Day Fiancé What Now?, 90 Day Fiancé Pillow Talk, 90 Day Fiancé Happily Ever After, and their own cooking show, Spice It Up with David and Annie.
No!
It's David and Annie Toborowski.
Oh my gosh!
Hello, hi. David and Annie.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi, Lauren.
Lauren, if you want a signed picture, no charge. Let us know. We will give you a signed picture.
I love you guys so much. This is so awesome to meet you. So genuinely.
Thank you.
You know, what's funny is Paul Abdul reached out to me through a mutual friend to ask me about what was going on with Paul and Karini. Because I talk to Paul all the time. So you're... And funny you say the same things that everybody asks. What's going on with Paul and Karini? He asks himself every day.
Who knows?
You know? Oh my gosh, I love this so much.
Oh, I'm so glad.
This is so great. I'm totally speechless. You guys are the best ones on that show. Oh, that's just the God's
so
honest
much.
Truth. It's true.
For those who aren't as familiar with the 90 Day Universe, I should explain that you were on season 5 of 90 Day Fiancé. That's when
Lauren hated me, yes.
Listen, that was common, okay? Everyone had their issues, but then we got to know you.
Well, what's so interesting is that as I was researching for this show, I saw so many internet comments, and so many of them were people who thought that because of your age difference and your cultural difference and your families that you weren't going to work out, and now you're their favorite couple.
Well, I couldn't ask for a better queen in the world. She is. I call her my queen each and every day.
We work so hard on that to prove ourselves. We did it together.
Well, because if two people stick together,
nothing bad can happen.
And that's how we've gotten through this year. And we tell that to anybody, is whether from quarantine or to what you all are doing by showing what is going on in your universe, we will get through this pandemic. And we will be stronger for it, better for it.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
And one of the spinoffs that you did was about your life in quarantine. And one of the interesting things that I found from watching clips of that is that, first of all, that going out for you has become a different experience because you get recognized. But also that you've had to deal with a lot of negative online comments as many of positives there have been. Tell us about how do you put up with those negative comments and even the bullying. And unfortunately, of course, because it's the internet, some of them have been racially motivated.
I mean, it was.
I mean, Annie went through this comment where she said, "You're draining on America. You're dragging. You're sucking the life out of me." I didn't know we had much life left us at the time. I mean, it was like CPR, but that's okay. You know, I mean, it just people have. They were angry. They were frustrated. Where do you take your anger out?
Yeah.
This is, of course, pre-election season before we got into. So they would take it on anything. And, of course, we were very visible. Yes. Annie has given away over 800 to 1,000 masks she made herself.
Mm-hmm. And I'm still enjoying the life, even though I'm quarantined at home, doing math, do all the work, you know, sleep at 3 o'clock in the morning because all the work. And I still enjoy the life. Sometimes people, you know, they might be miserable or maybe they go on something we don't know that's make they turn the negative. They need to hit on someone just to make themselves feel good. So
I saw a quote from you, Annie. You said you can give them your kidney, they'll still hate you.
Yeah, some people that's like what I'm saying.
Yeah. But let me charge for it first. If we're going to give a kidney, I'm going to get at least a premium price. My father didn't sit on the board of the synagogue for nothing. I mean, it's, you know.
Let's talk about this cooking show. Sure. It's called Spice It Up. People can see it on Facebook Watch and there's some episodes on YouTube as well. Did this start because when you guys were watching Pillow Talk, Annie would come and make food and even in bed? Well,
let me tell you the genesis of Annie cooking. Growing up, you know, they still, even to this day, her mom cooks outside on charcoal. Mm-hmm. And when we lived in the storage facility, we didn't have a proper kitchen. So Annie can cook from anywhere. Yes. I've literally seen her crouching down. I thought she was using the bathroom. And it's just the way she cooks over the hot plate at that time. We love the show.
Yeah.
You know, we were on it. We've been part of it.
As the people know me at the beginning, you know, they know I love to cook. Because I always say I love to cook. I like to cook. And I like to post a photo of my food, you know, on social media.
And Bourdain and Zimmer have been an inspiration for me for many years. I've been to 65, 66 countries in my life, either for work or for travel. And it's a way, because if you break bread together and you share a meal and you share culture, you're not fighting. You know, we can change the world one meal at a time by sharing each other's culture. And that's what we basically have done. And we just got back a month and a half ago from Zanzibar. I surprised her because, you know, her English, she listens to her Thai music. She wouldn't know if we were going to Toronto or if we were going to Tanzania. It wouldn't make a difference to her. So we got on the plane, went through Doha. And that's, you know, we got to experience their culture. We shared food. And that's really what the whole genesis of cooking and sharing, not just our relationship, but when you do it through food and you share cultures and stuff, how can we go wrong with that?
And Annie, you kind of take control with this cooking show because you're cooking a lot of your traditional Thai dishes.
Yes.
How did you learn to make these dishes?
How I love to cook for my mother, for my grandmother, for my generation. And also when I was 16, you know, I lived with a president. What do you call that?
The school director.
Yeah, the school director. She taught me a lot how to cook.
That's great. I kind of want to go back a little bit. Why did each of you want to be on the show? I can understand you're wanting to get married and you know, I can understand you're wanting to find love, but why have that documented for so many people?
Well, let me tell you, I've gained weight, but when I went to Thailand in 2013, I was at the lowest point in my life. I restarted my life. I lost a lot of weight when I was over there. I was living in China working when I met Annie. And I wasn't really prepared coming back to the U.S., to be honest with you, after 5 years. And by sharing our story, there's a lot of guys, and you guys are younger, that were my age that went through 08, 9, 10 with the downturn, lost their homes, cars. A lot of them end up taking their own lives. I restarted my life at 45. Now I'm 52 now, so I'm 15 years older than I guess you are, Lauren. you know, and being able to share that was hope for other people. And then sharing our life, because we have something that is unique that I've found very rare. And, you know, she is my best friend. We have not been apart since being married for more than 12 hours.
Yeah. Mm. To me, before I met him, I never think I will marry because I still love, you know, my single life, my, you know, enjoy and whatever I do. So, but when I met him, I feel like, but you know, before I met him, I always feel like my inside, my heart is very empty. But after I met him, we laugh together, we enjoy life together, watch movie together. Everything I want to know, I ask him, he just like the Google. He just answer me right away. That's, he's always make me feel like home. Anywhere we go, if I am with him, I always feel like home. That's why make, you know, my heart so open for him and I feel love him more.
Oh, you guys are going to make me barf.
Well, at least you won't have to worry. You can take enough pills and it will help you cure that. But
well, I have to say, watching you guys, and especially compared to some of the other couples on the show, you can't help but do it. But just the joy and the fun that you guys seem to have with each other really comes across.
You know, and we wish each of them well. We wish them the best, you know, no matter what it is. Sometimes I might not agree with the way they're going about it, but you still hope. You want to shake them sometimes. There's times when you look at Big Ed and you're like, what the hell are you doing?
You can give them an advice. Doesn't mean they will take your advice. So everybody have a different journey. Everybody have a different mindset and different way for them to make themselves happiness.
Well, let's get to the reason that we brought you here as far as our game is concerned. You heard the question that we asked of Lauren. We wanted to know who the two couples in the 90 Day Universe, where one of the people comes from Thailand. Lauren was not able to give us one of the answers, so no point for that. But what was the answer for the other couple that Lauren gave, Helen?
Lauren said David and Annie.
David and Annie, was Lauren correct?
Yes, Lauren was correct. She even got my last name pronounced it correctly, which I can't even do half the time.
Yes, that was another part of our question. We wanted to know one of the last names. It was Toborowski. So congratulations. That's 2 points there for Lauren. The other answers, the other couple that we were looking for was, of course, Kyle and Noon. Kyle and Noon was the other couples. Kyle's last name is Huckabee. Noon's last name was Boonma. And Annie, your maiden name is Suwan.
Suwan.
So we would have accepted that as well.
Which is so much easier than, she went from a Suwan to Toborowski. I felt so bad about that.
She really does love you. Yeah. Well, before we let David and Annie go, Lauren, is there anything you'd like to ask or say to them while we have him here?
Listen, I've already gushed and I'll continue to. I commend you for, again, having so much fun with this entire universe. I think you're right. I think for me, I love documentaries. I love learning about other places, other people. And I love love. And so I think that that's part of this. And I think, again, you guys are just, you bring so much joy to it. You bring so much happiness. And I know that the show obviously is edited in a way, but the point is that over time, the truth, you know, comes through, and you can kind of tell that with the cast members that continue on for longer periods as you get to know them more. And you two are sweethearts of the whole universe. I'm so happy to meet you. And I'm so happy you're here. Genuinely. My stepdad's going to lose his mind. He's going to lose his mind. We text about 90 Day Fiance every day. So this is going to get some real cool points for me.
We appreciate being able to be on your game show and getting to watch what you guys are going through.
Yeah.
And it's interesting when you're put on the hot seat, how quick you can, you have a great recall, and Ben, great ad-libbing. No matter what, even if you didn't believe what you were saying, great. You definitely were trying to emulate Lauren.
I rarely
That's awesome.
Do.
You know?
Dave and Annie, if people want to find your show or find out more what you're up to, where can they go?
You can go to Spice It Up with David and Annie. It is on Facebook Watch or TLC Me. And to catch up, obviously, you can go to TLC.com or TLC Go, catch up on the app.
Yes, so and they also can follow my Facebook page. It's Chanoknin Suwan Toborowski. It's kind of like my name. It's just Google my name. It will pop up my Facebook page. I also share to my Facebook page and also David Toborowski Facebook page.
Yes. And I'm pretty much everywhere. If I haven't liked something you have, then something's wrong. So it's I try to like everything.
Well, we certainly like that you joined us today. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
It's David and Annie Toborowski.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.
All right. Helen, what is our score at the end of that round?
At the end of that round, Lauren Ash has 10 points and Ben Feldman has 0 points, with a round of questions for Ben coming up.
That's right. We're going to talk with Ben about a topic he knows about. Plus, later, Ben and Lauren will go head-to-head in our Fast Facts round, all to find a winner on Go Fact Yourself.
Hey, you like movies? What about coming up with movie ideas over the course of an hour? Because that's what we do every week on Story Break, a writer's room podcast where three Hollywood professionals have an hour to come up with a pitch for a movie or TV show based off of totally zany prompts.
Like that time we reimagined Star Wars based on our phone's autocomplete.
Luke Skywalker is a family man and it's Star Wars, but it's a good idea.
Okay, how about that time we broke the story of a bunch of Disney Channel original movies based solely on the title and the poster?
Okay, Sarah Hyland is a 50-foot woman. Let's just go with it, guys.
Or the time we finally cracked the Adobe Photoshop feature film.
Stamp tool is your Woody, and then the autofill is the new Buzz Lightyear.
Join us as we have a good time imagining all the movies Hollywood is too cowardly to make. Story Break comes out every Thursday on Maximum Fun. I don't know why I'm using this voice now.
Welcome back to Go Fact Yourself, where our score is Lauren Ash with 10 points and Ben Feldman with 0 points. Once again, here's J. Keith Van Stratton.
Thank you, Helen. All right, Ben, chance for you to put some points on the board. Of your many interests, you told us you know a lot about the play and movie Glengarry Glen Ross, 90s alt-rock, and Los Angeles sandwiches. Let's find out a little bit more about each of those. First, tell us why you chose the play and movie Glengarry Glen Ross for one of your topics.
Glengarry Glen Ross is a very important piece to me. Lauren, quit it with the eye rolling.
I'm not. I'm delightfully chuckling. It was not an eye roll. It was a delighted chuckle.
I don't want to come off as an expert in any of these because I will miss everything. I'm not good at remembering movies. I'm not one of those people that can quote everything. Mm-hmm. But this was a movie that really mattered to me. And in college, in acting school, when I was a theater major, this was the greatest male ensemble any of us had ever seen. And so we just watched it 1,000 times. And I just spent all of college and the majority of my adult life and even a good amount of time on the Superstore set being Pacino from that movie.
Interesting.
Have you ever done a production of it?
No, never. I've seen it on Broadway, and it's hard to divorce, especially Pacino, who's just like, you just cost me $6,000 and one Cadillac. What are you going to do about it?
Wow, that was amazing.
You know, yeah, and I've seen, it's I don't know, it really left a mark.
All right. Ben, you also said you know a lot about 90s alt-rock.
90s alt-rock was a big part of my life. I mean, 90s music in general was a big part of my life.
What bands?
The obvious, I mean, you know, there was like the day Kurt Cobain died, I just wept by my little TV in my room and drew... I wonder if it's here. It must be somewhere here. Like a little pencil etching of him. Like there's a moment in his Unplugged where he looks up in the middle of, I forget which song, the Where Did You Sleep Last Night? He like looks up and the camera catches his eyes and it's like this, to like 14-year-old me, it was like this profound, beautiful moment where I was looking into the soul of a ghost. And so I like drew all these pictures. I had pictures of Kurt Cobain everywhere, but you know, them... Pearl Jam, everybody, all of those people, and then a whole bunch of gangster rap too.
And then finally, Ben, you said you know a lot about Los Angeles sandwiches.
So sandwiches are a giant obsession of mine in general. A long time ago, someone asked me and my soon-to-be wife, I wanted to get a tattoo. I still haven't gotten one, but they were like, well, what would you get? And I was like, well, the only thing that I know I'll love until the day I die is a sandwich. And I'm still, and that's still the plan, is to get a sandwich tattooed somewhere.
Will you please get a tramp stamp?
I feel like just the shape of a sandwich in that place would be suggested. I feel like there'd be other references or I don't know, that wouldn't say the right message.
I'm sorry. I'm just imagining like a Philippe's French dip on your ankle.
Helen, that's an important distinction. I shouldn't even be as broad as to say all sandwiches because I like more classic cold cut. I don't even like the hot sandwiches.
Oh.
I don't even take your meatball somewhere else. I don't want it.
Wow.
I want a meatball sandwich.
Shots fired.
Your steak and cheese, beat it.
Yeah. So
I want something cold.
What is your favorite sandwich in LA?
easily the best sandwich in LA is, for me, the Larchmont Wine and Spirits over on Larchmont. It's a little wine shop, mm-hmm. For those who don't know. And if you go at lunchtime, there's a line out
there. Oh, I know.
In COVID time, there's a line down to,
you know. Drove past it 3 days ago, and there is a humongous line because it was lunchtime.
What's their specialty?
I get the number 4, which is turkey on French. Sometimes I'll go tuna when they have it because that's a special thing that they do. But yeah, they're the best. They're
all
the
right. Best. So to summarize, Ben, you said you know a lot about the play and movie Glengarry Glen Ross, 90s alt-rock and Los Angeles sandwiches. Today we're going to quiz you about Glengarry Glen Ross.
All right. Let's do this.
You mentioned that you'd seen it on Broadway. Do you remember which production that was?
Yes. Liev Schreiber, I'm going to say mid to late aughts. I'm not sure.
And are you a fan of David Mamet in general?
Yeah, I am, very much so. I mean, it was as a theater kid in college, I wasn't one of the musical theater kids. Mm-hmm. I was like the drama. And as like straight guy can't sing in a theater department, like you want those like masculine, bro-y shows. And Mamet wrote a lot of them.
All right. Well, just ahead, we're going to enlist the help of a bona fide expert in your topic to test your mastery in the subject with the expert level question worth up to 3 points. But before that, to let you show your love, Ben, here are 5 trivia questions about your topic, each worth 1 point. If you want it, you're allowed a hint for any 2 of these 5 questions. Now, Lauren, do listen closely, because if Ben answers incorrectly, you can steal. Lauren, by the way, how much do you know about Glengarry Glen Ross?
I read it once in theater school, and ooh, I also have seen it, maybe, the movie? But, so I don't know that my level of knowledge would be anywhere even close. So I think that you got a real chance to shine here, buddy, and I'm rooting for you.
All right, Ben, she's rooting for you. Let's see if we can shine indeed. Here's question number 1. Ben, one of the most famous scenes from the movie version of Glengarry Glen Ross does not appear in the play. It's when a character played by Alec Baldwin introduces the salesman to his method of selling called ABC. The A stands for always, the B stands for the word be, and the C stands for what activity that a salesman should always be doing.
Always be closing.
Helen?
Remember, boys and girls, always, A always, B, C closing.
That is correct.
That is correct. Fun fact, that scene has been parodied in many subsequent movies and TV shows, including by Alec Baldwin himself on Saturday Night Live, where he gives a similar speech to Santa's Workshop.
Yeah, the Christmas one. It's so good. I love that.
Great. All right, here's question number 2. The play was written by David Mamet, but who wrote the screenplay adapting the stage play into the movie?
David Mamet.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. Couldn't fool you on that one.
The way you asked it was really, that was impressive. You should, that's good acting.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Wow. An endorsement. Fun fact, it's been reported that Mamet received $500,000 for the rights to make a movie and another $500,000 to write the screenplay. Here's question number 3. One of the main characters is Sheldon Levine, but he's rarely called by that name. Besides Shelley, what nickname do his coworkers use for him?
The Machine! The Machine! That's what they say.
Ellen?
That is correct.
That is, of course, correct. Very nice, with a little impersonation in there as well. Levine was played in the movie by Jack Lemmon. Fun fact, so The Machine good. Is also the nickname of Angels' designated hitter, Albert Pujols. All right, you are 3 for 3, Ben. That was more of a fun fact for me.
Some of our fun facts are questionably fun.
Sure.
Yes.
Sure.
And yet, all of them factual. Here's question number 4. You still do have 2 hints available. The title, Glengarry Glen Ross, is taken from the names of 2 real estate developments the salesmen are trying to sell. Name one of them.
Glen Ross Farms.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct for the point. Ben triumphantly pumping his fist.
Did not remember the other one.
The other one is Glengarry Highlands. Glengarry Highlands and Glen Ross Farms. Glengarry.
Because the Highlands one is, those are the leads. Those are the ones that they care about. And I forgot. Okay.
That's okay. You're 4 for 4. Ben, you have a chance to go 5 for 5 if you can get this next question correct.
Okay.
Ben, some see the play and movie as an exploration of masculinity. In fact, in the play, there are no roles specifically written for women. And the movie only adds 1 on-screen speaking role for a woman. What is that role? You do have a hint available. I know you're excited, but just to let you know, if you'd like to use the hint, you can.
Let me hear a hint, but I think I know.
Okay. Helen, how about that first hint?
The character's name is her job, and you used to see women perform this job near the entrance of restaurants and nightclubs, but not so much anymore.
Hostess.
Helen?
That is not correct.
No, I'm terribly sorry.
I knew it was someone in a restaurant. I thought it was like server or bartender or something. What was it?
No, well, we'll get to that in a second. But okay. No, that means, Lauren, you have a chance to steal.
Oh, gosh. Oh, and in the front of, I'm trying to think of what I would have said hostess too. Waitress?
Helen?
That is not correct.
No, I'm terribly sorry. No point for either of you. Coat check girl.
She was a coat check girl. Oh, right. Yes.
That's right. She only has one line. It takes place in the first few minutes of the film, and that role was played by Lori Tan Chin in that Chinese restaurant across the street from their office.
Oh, yeah.
Still, Ben,
raining.
You must...
They all needed coats.
That's right. Yeah, you got it. Where are you going to put those coats? All right, Ben, you still did very well in your round. Now here's your expert level question that requires multiple answers. It's time for your cluster fact. We'll be bringing on an expert to assess your response. Ben, Glengarry Glen Ross has been seen in four notable forms, three productions on Broadway, and a movie. For those four performances, three of the actors playing Richard Roma have been either nominated for an Oscar or won a Tony for the role. So for up to 3 points, who are three of the four actors who played Richard Roma on Broadway or in the movie?
So Pacino.
Okay.
Liev Schreiber.
Okay.
I feel like Dustin Hoffman. I don't know. That's going to be a guess because I don't remember who played it earlier.
You're going to go with Dustin Hoffman, though?
Sure, why not?
Okay, great. All right, Helen is taking note of those answers. We have an expert on hand who can tell us for sure. Helen, who do we have tonight?
Joining us tonight is an actor whose long career has featured several collaborations with David Mamet, including winning a Tony for his role in the original cast of Glengarry Glen Ross. It's Joe Mantegna!
Oh my God, Joe Mantegna.
Hello, Mr. Mantegna. Are you there?
Right.
I'm here. How you doing?
Very, very well. So nice to meet you. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Oh my God, it's really
That's
you.
So cool.
Well, somebody's got to be me, I guess.
Yeah, you did it on Broadway.
I did it on Broadway in 1984. I did the original production on Broadway, yeah.
Wow. Well, we'll talk to you about that in a moment, but of course people recognize you from your dozens of movies, including Searching for Bobby Fischer, The Godfather Part 3, where you worked with Al Pacino, and House of Games, many of those. You did 13 years on Criminal Minds. And something that you have in common with Ben is that you've directed some of the episodes that you've been in. Of your show. What's that like to direct yourself and to direct others on a show like Criminal Minds?
Well, it was a real privilege and a real joy, actually. I wound up doing, I think, nine episodes of the show. And a few of us wound up doing that. Mm-hmm. I mean, a show that ran total 15 seasons gave us that opportunity. It was a wonderful experience, especially because we were also very close. And
yeah.
So I love doing it.
You stay in touch with the cast still. I understand you guys have a running text thread.
Yeah, we do. I mean, especially that final eight of us that wound up doing the last 3 or 4 years. And I'm sure they both understand, especially being
our
on the series.
Our friend Kristen Vangsness has been on our show.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Kristen is, anybody who watches the show, they often say, is she really like that? And I go, yeah, even more so.
Do you think you'd want to go back and do another TV series after 13 years on that?
Yeah, I would. I mean, for me, I mean, television, doing a television series actually was a kind of a choice of mine at one point in my career, because I've been very blessed to have done a lot of theater, done a lot of films. But there came a time in my career, especially after my children were born and started growing up, that it was the travel that became kind of difficult in some ways. And I wanted to travel more on my own time as opposed to, you know, oh, I got to go here, there, and everywhere. It was nice to be able to travel. In fact, something that Lauren will appreciate, I used to work a lot in Toronto, and the year we shot Searching for Bobby Fischer, I took Ben Kingsley to his very first baseball game, which was the
what?
Toronto Blue Jays.
Oh my God.
That's amazing.
Oh, and not only that, we became very close friends with Dave Boomer Wells.
Oh, sure.
The pitcher Dave
of
Wells.
Of course.
Who won a World Series on one of those teams.
Yeah, because while we were up there, the band Chicago was also going to be playing a concert in Toronto. And they contacted me because I've known them since I was a teenager. That's a whole other story. I was in a band in the 60s and I used to play kind of with them. We toured together and all that. Anyway, they called me and says, hey, you know, you want to come to the concert? We know you're up in, we heard from your wife, you're up in Toronto. We'll be there. I said, great. So I said, can I bring some of the cast members? They said, great. So I asked Ben Kingsley and Joan Allen if they'd like to go to this Chicago concert. And, I said, the Moody Blues are playing with them. And of course, Ben loved that. He went, oh, the Moody Blues. That's my, I love that band. So,
oh, wait, I love how you say, of course, as if we all know the huge Moody Blues fan that Sir Ben Kingsley is.
Well, he was. But so what was funny is, so Ben says to me, he goes, so do we have a vehicle taking us to the engagement? I says, yeah, we've got a vehicle. I said, just meet in the hotel lobby. And of course, we're in a lobby and Ben's expecting like a car to pull up. The Chicago bus pulls up in front of the hotel with the name Chicago on the side. And he looks at me. I go, yeah, that's right. We're going with the band. So we go up onto the bus. And all, now these guys are very Chicago guys, as is myself.
Yeah.
And so they see me, it's like, hey, Joe, I'm fucking hey, Joe. And then all of a sudden, oh, by the way, here's my two guests, Joan Allen and Ben Kingsley. And so instantly when they see Ben, they get like, oh, like, oh, oh, well, oh, Mr. Kingsley, please. They became like they were from, you know, London all of a sudden.
What even is your life?
Yeah, I want to know more. Like, I want to know more about the band that you were in.
Well, I was in a band called the Apocryphals. Now, our band, we were a great, good cover band. In other words, we let's say we played in African-American black neighborhoods. We'd put on the white Temptation suits and sing all kinds of soul music.
Oh, my God.
When we played in the suburbs, we put on Paisley and we would do all that kind of stuff. Like,
oh,
you
my
know.
God.
So we were whores. I mean, we would just play what they wanted to hear. Well, needless to say, I finally left playing. I was in the band for 5 years, then I got cast in the play Hair in 1969, which was my first.
You did the original Hair?
The Broadway Hair. I did after Broadway. They opened one in Los Angeles. They opened one in Chicago. Okay. So I did the one in Chicago.
And so, did you have to get naked and run through the audience?
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's a whole other story. That's how I got my wife though, because she was in the play too. So it worked out.
Is that where you met her?
Well, we actually knew each other before, but that's when we first got together. So her and I have been together since 1969.
Oh,
so,
that's awesome.
So that worked out. And I credit the nude scene to why she's attracted to me. But that's my story.
She knew what she was getting into. Well, let me ask you about Glengarry Glen Ross. How did you first get involved in that play?
Well, I've known Mamet since about early 70s, maybe 1972 in Chicago. I was studying to be in, this was past that. I was in a theater company called the Organic Theater in Chicago. We were doing straight plays, original stuff that we were doing. And Mamet was in town trying to peddle his stuff as a playwright. And I remember this is how we met. We were at I had been a student at the Goodman School of Drama, which is now the theater school at DePaul University. And he sees me coming down the stairs and he stops me and goes, hey, and he had seen me in this production I had done at the Organic Theater of this, whatever play that was. And he says, hey, I really like you in this play. I'd love you to, maybe someday we'll work together. You can, you can do my stuff. And I'm saying, yeah, great. You know, whoever you are, that'd be terrific. Well, as it turned out, a little short time passed and he came to our theater company and our producing director, Stuart Gordon, and he picked up on Dave's talent in his writing. And he said, yeah, this guy's really, let's do some of his stuff. And so Mamet came to us with the original script of American Buffalo, which is, by the way, the movie that Dustin Hoffman did that Ben was thinking of.
In retrospect.
But when he came to us with that script, all he wanted to do was hear it. And I remember at the end of it, Mamet saying, so what, what'd you think? You know, I remember I probably said stuff like, yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, I don't know. The ending could probably use a little work or something. Yeah. Who knows?
I don't think you're going to win the Pulitzer or anything.
No. So as it turned out, that led to many other things like that. In other words, David would call me and say, would you, like, I'm doing the reading of my stuff. He still wasn't really well known, but he, starting to get some play. He said, we're doing reading of my stuff at the Chicago Public Library. Would you read some of my stuff? Like, I said, of course, because I felt the kind of characters he was writing for was kind of the way I grew up. I grew up in the west side of Chicago, and he was writing about characters in a world that I kind of felt very familiar with. And then it was 1983, I get this phone call. I'm living here in Los Angeles doing little bit parts on sitcoms. And he called and he says, hey, I've got this new play, thinking we're going to take it to Chicago and see how it goes. And if it goes, we'll go to New York. You in? I said, well, yeah, send me the play. Let me check it out. Now, I knew nothing about real estate. My parents never owned a house, so I grew up in apartments my entire life. So he sends me this play. I read the play, and it's all about leads and this, and I don't know what the hell a lead is. It was like reading hieroglyphics to me. But I could tell that it was like, it was a great character. So Ricky Roma, yeah, this guy seems, you know, I could relate to the guy, but I don't know what the hell he's talking about. So I literally, I remember Mammoth called me the next day, goes, so Joe, we call, you know, it was supposed to be Montaigne. Yo, Montaigne. He goes, so did you read the play? What do you think? I said, and I lied to him. I said, you know, Dave, I didn't get to it. I couldn't get to it. Something came up. I'll read it today. Because I realized I got to find out what the hell a lead is. And all this stuff is. So I made some phone calls to like guys I knew that like had lived in homes that understood real estate. And I said, oh, a lead. Yeah, this is when you did that. And I was like, oh, okay. So then when I read it again, it like, okay, at least I know what the hell he's talking about, what he's doing. So then I called Dave back. And I really, my wife and I, we, you know, we were in L.A., like I said, we were living in a little apartment in Studio City. It was great and all, but I wasn't committed to do anything. So it was like, sure, Dave, let's go. You know, this sounds like fun, you know. And that was it. So obviously doing Glengarry changed my life because I went from, you know, guy doing like, you know, little bits here and there and wondering where the next job's coming from. That, no, we're in New York. I win the Tony Award. He won the play, wins the Pulitzer Prize. Wow. I'm able to do the play for a year on Broadway, tour 6 months with Peter Falk around the country. Mm. So 1984 have been Betty, Betty good to me.
Joe, have you written a memoir?
Yeah, seriously.
No, no. Like, too many people are going to have to die before I do that. But that's okay.
Man, there's so much I want to ask you about, but let me wrap up with this. Of all sure. of the different work that you've had over the years, of all the different times you've done theater and TV shows and movies, you've said that nothing interferes, though, with your doing The Simpsons.
yeah, that's true.
You played Tony on The Simpsons. Why is that so important to you? I read that even if Fat Tony coughs or has one line, you want to be there.
I think both the actors could relate to this, but my feeling is, you know, there are moments that when you're doing a movie or TV show or whatever it may be, they'll say, hey, you know, we need to do a close-up of just the hand there, and we didn't get it in the last shot, but we'll let you stand and do it. We'll just get it. And my feeling is, I said, no, you can't do that. And they'll say, well, why? It's just your hand. Nobody will know. I said, I'll know. And it's the same thing with the character of the voice. So they figure, okay, they brought me in to play this guy on this cartoon show that I knew very little about. But let me check this out. And I looked at it. I looked at a couple of their, because this was their third season. I thought, oh, this is, looks fun. Yeah, this looks great. I'll do it. I was very close to my Uncle Willie. So I thought, I'll try it. So I remember I finally, you know, I did my first line, like, yeah, how you doing? This is whatever. And nobody said stop. So he says, oh, great. So I did it, thinking, that's it. One shot deal. I'm out. My Uncle Willie will get a kick out of it that I used his voice. But then when they called me back a few weeks later saying, you know, yeah. I like the character. Would you consider doing it again? I said, well, hell yeah, I'll do it again. Why not? Oh. Well, that was 30 years ago.
Yeah.
I've been doing it for 30 years now. But I love it. And like I say, it's not some things you do for the bucks, some you do for the yucks. I think those regulars on The Simpsons, they're doing it for the bucks. Joe Montaigne is doing it for the yucks.
Yeah.
But I love it, and it's been a real privilege to do Fat Tony.
You were doing this show for the yucks, and we really, really appreciate
it. Yeah, doing
this
for the yucks, too.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's get to the reason we brought you here as far as our game is concerned. You heard the question that we asked of Ben. We wanted to know three of the four people who had played Richard Roma, either on Broadway or in the movie. Helen, what was the first answer that Ben gave us?
Ben said Al Pacino.
And Mr. Mantegna?
Al Pacino did the movie, of course. Yes,
he did. That's a point for Ben. Very good. Al Pacino actually did a production of Glengarry Glen Ross on Broadway where he played Shelley Levine later on in his life. All right, Helen, what was the next answer that Ben gave us?
Ben said Liev Schreiber.
And Mr. Mantegna?
That's correct. And I'll tell you one little anecdote about that. He was the second person to do it. I mean, 10 years, I think it was about 10 years after I had done it, if not maybe more.
I think it was about 20. He did it in 2005.
Maybe it was 20. Okay, 20. I'd like to say 10, but I guess it is 20.
Sorry, I know anyway. You were also very young like Lauren.
I was a child when I did it. But anyway, I remember when he won the Tony Award, which was the same Tony that I had won for it, I wrote him a letter. And I didn't know him. I didn't know him at all. But I wrote him a letter and had it sent to the theater. And I said, Dear Liev, I said, people often say to other people, I know how you feel. But I think in this case, I really do. You know, congratulations. And then when I finally first met him, we were at a function. It was actually a CBS function or something like that. And we talked. And he said to me, he goes, I got to tell you, I came and saw Glenn. My father took me to see the play Glengarry Glen Ross when I was a teenager. And I saw you do it on Broadway. And he said, that was one of my big impetus is to be an actor. And I mean, that touched me so, because to think that then 20 something years later,
wow,
he would win the Tony Award for this performance that he saw me do,
wow,
as a high school kid, you know. But Liev is correct that he absolutely was
very good. Another point for Ben. And then Helen, what was the third answer that Ben felt?
Why are we doing this?
Ben said Dustin Hoffman.
And Joe?
All right.
That's incorrect, but as I recall, and I talked to him about it too, and congratulated him, and he's a wonderful actor, but it was Bobby Cannavale.
Yeah, Bobby Cannavale did it in the latest revival. And of course, who played it in the original?
You're looking at him,
Joe Mantegna. Joe, before we let you go, Ben, is there anything you'd like to ask or say to Joe Mantegna while we have him?
Quickly, just quick question for you. Thoughts on, as a Glengarry originalist, thoughts on the Baldwin extra scene, and what was the vibe with everybody in Glengarry world seeing that?
Well, I mean, I can't speak for everybody, but I mean, I think, you know, that was a choice they made. And obviously it was a good one, because, I mean, I think that thing got a lot of play.
Yeah.
I mean, in the play itself, you know, that character was referenced and all that, mm-hmm, but you never saw him. But I mean, it seemed to work. And of course, the point is Mamet wrote it.
Right.
I mean, he writes the words. And so it's like you said, your reference to it is seeing Pacino in the movie. So that's what you hold on to, and you, right, should. That's the what you have. So it just depends on whatever somebody's point of reference is.
Joe, I've got to say, it's been an honor and a delight to hear your stories. We thank you so much for joining us. If people want to find out more about you or your work, I know you've got a website people can go to.
Yeah, you go to, my assistant does the stuff. I don't even know. I'm like a dinosaur. I'm lucky. If I didn't have kids, I wouldn't even know how to text. You know what I mean?
Well, fortunately, you do work that's very easy to find and a pleasure to find. And it's a pleasure that you found us. Thank you so much for joining us, Joe Mantegna.
My pleasure.
Wow.
Thank you very much.
Yay.
You're literally the most interesting man in the world. I'm
not. True. All right. What a wonderful segment. Helen, what is our score as we head into the final round?
At the end of that round, Lauren Ash has 10 points and Ben Feldman has 6 points.
All right. Now it is time for our final round we call Fast Facts. I'll read 10 statements and each contestant will answer with true or false. I'll start with Lauren and alternate between each guest. Each correct answer is worth 1 point. Again, the answer to each statement is true or false. Here we begin. Lauren, Pizza Hut has been around for more than 25 years.
True.
Correct.
Yes, over 60 years. Ben, Pizza Hut was founded in Argentina.
False.
Correct.
That's right. It was founded in Wichita, Kansas in the USA. Duh. Lauren, Pizza Hut used to have a mascot.
True.
Correct.
Ben, the mascot was named Pizza the Hut.
True.
Incorrect.
No, that was from Spaceballs.
That was a guess, yeah, and I even acted like I knew.
That's right. Lauren, the mascot was named Huddy.
True.
Incorrect.
Nope. Ben, the mascot was named Pizza Paul.
True.
Incorrect.
No, Lauren, the mascot was named Pizza Pete.
It's got to be true.
Correct.
It is. Ben, Elijah Wood once appeared in a Pizza Hut commercial.
True.
Correct.
Lauren, one of the Beatles once appeared in a Pizza Hut commercial.
False.
Incorrect.
No, Ringo Starr did. Ringo Starr was in a Pizza Hut commercial. Ben, Mikhail Gorbachev once appeared in a Pizza Hut commercial.
True.
Correct.
Yes, he really did. Lauren, I once appeared in a Pizza Hut commercial.
True.
Correct.
Yep, I really did. Ben, you once appeared in a Pizza Hut commercial.
False. True.
Correct.
We'll take your word for it. And finally, Lauren, at some point, everyone gets to appear in a Pizza Hut commercial.
I hope it's true. I'm going to say true.
Yes. Sure.
Sure. We're not going to count those last few. Those were just for fun. But we want to thank Ben and Lauren as Helen tabulates the final score. All right, Helen, are you ready to pronounce the winner of tonight's episode?
I am. At the end of the game, Lauren Ash has 13 points and Ben Feldman has 9 points.
A very good showing by Ben Feldman. But congratulations, Lauren. You are the facting champion on Go Fact Yourself. Lauren, what will you do with your championship?
I will at least feel a little bit better about my loss at lip sync battle against Ben. This makes me feel like we're even again.
That's okay. Right. The arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards tie.
Exactly.
Towards tie games. All right, want to give everyone here a chance to promote anything that they would like. Lauren, where can people find you and your work?
Well, you can find me on Instagram at Lauren Elizabeth Ash. I'm on there the most. And please, if you're interested in true crime cocktails, laughs, murder, any of the above, give a listen to my new podcast, True Crime and Cocktails. It's available everywhere you listen to podcasts. And you can follow us on Instagram at True Crime and Cocktails.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining us. It's wonderful to meet you, Lauren Ash. Ben Feldman, where can people find you and your work?
You can find me by just just writing my name into Google right up at the top. Other than that, I've got some socials. Ben M. Feldman. I know it's annoying. I know it sounds like it's your dad's handle, but that's what I've got. So Ben M. Feldman. And then, you know, on Superstore and Monsters and wherever else I can get work. And in outside Joan Montana's apartment, all of my usual haunts.
Excellent. Well, we thank you for joining us in our haunt, Ben Feldman. Ladies and gentlemen, my hosting partner is Helen. She is Hong. She is Helen Hong. What are you going on?
If you haven't seen me co-starring with Ben Feldman in Silicon Valley, we are I am in the final season of Silicon Valley. Catch up on that. I'm on a series called The Unicorn on CBS. The first season is on Netflix right now. The second season is on CBS or CBS All Access. And you can follow me on the socials at Funny Helen Hong, because that other Helen Hong, she ain't funny.
No, she ain't. She is funny. She is Helen. She is Hong. She is funny Helen Hong. And me, you can find me on Twitter at @J_Keith, on Instagram at jkeith.net, all spelled out. That just leaves me to thank Lauren Ash, Ben Feldman, David and Annie Toborowski, Joe Mantegna. Please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, all at GoFactorPod. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Update our wiki at GoFactorWiki.fandom.com and buy our T-shaped shirt at MaxFunStore.com. I'm J. Keith Van Stratton. Good night. Like what you hear? Come see us live. Someday. Maybe someday soon. Ooh. It's free. Go to GoFactorPod.com for our schedule and tickets. And give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts like .AndreaGreaterThanSign did. He, she, or they said, such a fun podcast. A pleasant, entertaining distraction in the terribleness that is 2020. Thanks, .AndreaGreaterThanSign. And don't worry, it's almost over. Ellen?
Go Fact Yourself is a panel quiz program devised and produced by Jim Newman and J. Keith Van Stratton and comes to you via transcription from various homes across the country. Questions on Go Fact Yourself were compiled by the Trivia Industrial Complex. It is produced in collaboration with Maximum Fun. Our theme song and incidental music were written and performed by Jonathan Green. Maximum Fun senior producer is Laura Swisher. Associate producer, engineer, editor, and we think secretly Batman is Julian Burrell. Special thanks to George Wendt, Megan O'Keefe, Mary Chalenza, Martin Geller, Valeria Almada, Danielle Matlin, Mona Yeager, Jimmy Pardo, Sean Pulaski, Brandon J. Carr, Clint Tauscher, Mike Avellanos, Adam Nediff, Dave Bianchi, Eric Tran, and Christine Vallada. I've been Helen Hong!
Let's go make Joe Mantegna write a book! We might be in it.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.